Hey, Starburns listeners, Ben Schwartz here, and I'm here to plug. Here I go. I am in a new movie with Noelle Wells on Netflix. It is called Happy Anniversary. It is out right now. All you have to do is basically go on your computer or whatever device you want. You just click on it, and there we are. It's me. It's Noelle Wells, and it's the story of a couple on their three-year anniversary. They wake up, and on that moment, Noelle's character is done. She feels like she doesn't think she can take any more of the relationship. And throughout the course of the movie, which takes place in over the course of 24 hours, you flash back to all the good, the bad, everything that encompasses this relationship to try to find out if these two actually will stay together or if they won't stay together. It's right now. It is a romantic comedy. Me and Noelle Wells, written and directed by Jared Stern. Netflix, Happy Anniversary, Starburns, lots of words, ending with exclamation. When's it gonna end? It just did. Another tag, and now it's done.
Hello, everyone. We're from the podcast Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
And this is our new show, My Opening Line.
Woo!
We talk embarrassing moments of people's first times on stage, your big comedians, your artists, things that they are humiliated to otherwise talk about. From the show Adam Ruins Everything, the great Adam Cano.
Hello! It's so nice to be here.
I love your show.
Thank you for saying so. That's so kind of you.
And it changes my life because recently I saw the episode where you explain how it doesn't matter the expiration dates on food.
Yeah, that just came out. That's right.
I've been eating moldy bread, milk with lumps on it, the money I've been saving and the friends I no longer have to deal with.
You know, the point is not that you can eat any food. It's that your own detection of signs of spoilage, such as visible mold and lumps, are more important than the date.
Okay.
You know, so if you're like, this smells fine, but it's expired, then it's probably okay because most of those dates are best buy where it's just right. A suggestion of we think it tastes better if you eat it this quick.
Does it start the working on this? You created the show.
Yeah.
Did it start from friends going, dude, you know everything. Make a fucking show.
It came from them going, me trying to tell them things and them going, shut up. Like, right. This is annoying. And me thinking, oh, that's a funny interaction I could put, you know what I mean? That same sort of thing. You know, it's like, I compared a little bit, like, I don't know, like Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that, where it's like, it's like, that's like Larry David knowing his own flaws and putting them on TV and making fun of them, you know? And so that's a little bit what our show is too. That's what I try to do.
Right. Somebody says, oh yeah, make sure I have to get my 8 glasses of water today. And you pop in. Actually,
yeah, and I would do that in real life, and I would be chastised justifiably, rightly so, for doing so.
And now you get paid for it.
Now I get paid to do. So here's the moral of the story. If whatever way you are truly terrible, just lean into that, and you'll eventually be paid for it.
You also, do you do stand-up as much
as
you used to?
Yes, I do. Not as much as I used to. Well, I have spent the last... like, you know, 5 to 7 years of, I think maybe come up on my 6th anniversary, doing stand up really hardcore. And so I don't do it as much as I did when I was like, oh, I'm doing 7 sets a week kind of open mic shit. But I still do stand up and I love doing stand up and I have a lot of fun. And that's what I do when I'm on tour most of the time.
Well, I imagine that people now are recognizing you from Adam Ruins Everything and your hecklers must be. Does anyone go, you're ruining life for me?
A little bit, yeah. You know, you ruined diamonds or whatever, you know. But people like it, you know. It's like, it's just sort of.
That's what he's telling his parents.
It sort of falls in the category of people. You know, saying your catchphrase back to you is what it's a little bit. That's how I feel about it. You know, like people are like, you ruined this, you ruined that. You know, and people are like, you ever get tired of that? It's like, if you coin a catchphrase, like you should be happy when people say it back to you because it means you're making money.
Yeah, I guess it's better than, did I do that?
Oh, yeah, it's way better than that. Yeah, absolutely.
Will people pull you aside and say, hey, my wife's here. Tell her about the diamonds or bullshit thing.
No one's ever made me do that, but people have been like, I sent this to my wife, and they'll either say, we're not getting an engagement ring, we saved some money, or they'll say, my wife was not happy, or whatever. Sometimes there are guys who are, the funniest are guys who are, it's about how diamond engagement rings are worthless, and they were, you know, or they were a marketing creation by the De Beers Corporation is the original segment.
You know, and diamonds are ruining our lives, yada, yada, yada. Anyway. Adam.
So, well, just, I realized we hadn't, you know, for people who haven't seen it, but guys, some guys were like, oh, I was just about to propose, but me and my girlfriend saw it and now I didn't have to get a ring, thank you so much. But then there are guys who saw it after they proposed. They're like, yeah, thanks a lot, man, now I know. I wasted all that cash on the engagement ring, you know.
You're like the news. They have the answers, but to find out what not to eat that's killing you, find out tonight.
Yes.
Or later on in the season, yeah. We're going to tell, I can use the diamond thing now, Adam.
Mm-hmm. We tease it like that. Yeah.
Do you remember the very first joke or the very first opening line when you did stand up?
I do. Man, it was, I don't remember the actual line itself, right. Unfortunately.
This was the first time you actually stood up on a stage by yourself doing stand-up,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was in...
Before we get to that, well, yeah, what leads to that moment? Friends encouraging you or you watching people not be so good?
Well, so in college...
I love that those are his two options. Yes. Did you think that you were great or everybody sucked?
Well, in college, I started... Like, I always loved comedy. And then when I was in college, my friend started a sketch comedy group. And I joined the sketch comedy group. It was called Old English. We had like some success on the early
Old internet. English. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah. It was named after our favorite malt liquor.
And that sounds like you're in college.
Yes, very collegey, extremely collegey. And so we did, you know, we did sketch comedy. We wrote things and we performed it that way. And then we all moved to New York to
keep
doing
that.
You guys
from the circuit. I was in Champail and we would have to compete against them in different
I was in Moe.
Right.
Okay. I was like, was it? No, wait, he's having some fun. He's having some fun with me. But so I started, I had a love of stand-up, you know. I was into, I remember getting into George Carlin and Lewis Black and like, you know, Patton Oswalt was getting really good around when I was doing sketch comedy, you know, and I was really, really into it. And then I moved to New York and I was like, oh, there are like open mics and you can do them. And, you know, I just had this awareness of it. And I was like, and so, you know, we were just doing comedy. I was like, that's the kind of comedy I can do. Let me give it a try. But the first time I did it.
Do you remember the open mic that you went to?
I do remember which one it was. It was It was the Maui Taco open mic.
No.
Do you know this mic?
No, but it's called Maui Taco.
It's called Maui Taco. It was in the basement of a taco place in like Midtown, which is, first of all, tacos in Midtown. You're going to get tacos. Bizarre.
How did you find out about it?
There was a list called, at the time, the one that people used was called Giggle Chick. And it was like this lady. There's this weird thing where people who are comedians but then kind of failed at comedians would start lists of open mics. And so Giggle Chick, I'm sure she's a very nice lady. So there was lists on that. And then the one that I used later in New York was called Bad Slava. Do you remember Bad Slava? It was like this list of every open mic. You know, you could send in, I have an open mic here. Just all the comics used it in New York. The weird thing about that site was it was one page was New York open mic reviews. And then he had other different sections he was trying to get going for like event listings. One of them was reviews of massage parlors that gave happy endings. It was so the two things on this site were lists of every place to go to get an open mic, go to an open mic, and a list of every place to get a happy ending massage.
Oh, he knows his audience.
Did you ever mix up an address?
You know, I thought I was really killing.
When you said, here's my closer, they were like, okay.
Do you want everything? I'm like, yeah, all 6 minutes. I don't know. Sure.
Man.
How long were you going to get at this open mic? How many minutes were you allowed to go?
I don't remember specifically, but it couldn't have been more than five. You know, five is too long for an open mic, frankly, I now believe.
And how long did you have ready?
I had, I probably had 2 minutes, and here's my stupid idea, because I was very, like, writerly at the time. You know, I was like, oh, I have to have a funny idea that I'm going to, like, bring into being on stage, and I was very, you know, kind of alt-y, right? And so I had this, I had seen someone else at a college open mic or something. I just remember seeing some other comic do... And it was a different sketch guy who was like sort of making fun of stand up. He did like a whole bunch of jokes about apples. And I was like, oh, that's funny. The idea of doing a whole bunch of jokes on one dumb topic, right?
So you decided yours was banana.
I did something much worse than that.
Oh, no.
I decided that I was going to go up as this is so complicated. I won't blame you if you don't even understand what I'm going
to
say.
Great. We look forward to it.
I'll come up with a character and I'll write jokes in the perspective of a character. And the character I came up with was the perspective of, I've never talked about this before and I'm very mortified to bring this because this idea is so bad and so incomprehensible. I was going to go up as a, are you aware of the profession of tree doctor? Have you heard of a tree doctor?
I heard the name. I don't know what they do.
A tree doctor is someone who, you know, manages the health of trees, like in a park, you know, like they would go to a park and be like, oh, this tree has such and such a fungus. Let's get the fungus off, you know?
So it's exactly what you would think.
Yeah, it's exactly what you would think. Yeah. It's like a botanist who, you know, helps fix trees. So my character was going to be a tree doctor who was doing stand-up. And also, he hated bushes. And all of the jokes were about how much bushes suck.
Okay. So it was your coming out party.
Yeah, it was. Very sharp. And so, yeah, I don't remember any of the specific jokes. I honestly wish there might be a notebook somewhere deeply buried in a box with some of these terrible jokes in them. But it was like, you ever see a bush, you're just like, ugh, I hate, so ugly. Like, don't you wish you were looking at a majestic tree? I don't know what the fuck it was. And it was, but it was just like such, you know, it was one of those sets where it's just such absolute right. Like nobody.
Let me ask you this, because it sounded like it went over. It was a completely horrible start to finish.
Oh my God. Yes. And it was people had no idea to do with it. People didn't care at all. You know what I mean?
About like your tree.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that people don't realize about open mics, because they think that like people are going to love them or hate them, you know what I mean? But the actual effect is like total disinterest for most people, right? Like because
which is the worst.
Yeah, they're at an open mic, they're just like at their notebooks, right? And especially if you're doing something as complicated and nonsensical as what I was doing, they're not even gonna like.
I love how you add that it's complicated. Like as if it went over their heads.
I don't even know.
First of all, my mistake was not explaining what a tree doctor did.
Well, like, I'm doing an open mic set. The bit has like four. It's like I'm a tree doctor and I hate bushes and all my jokes are about bushes.
Ooh.
And like from this perspective.
Are you saying it like there's a lot of layers? And they hear them and I say them and they're trying to eat tacos.
Like,
how far into this bit were you like, abort, abort.
And oh my God, like immediately. I immediately knew it was bad, you know? But it had that thing of...
In your first line? In your opening line?
Yeah, like, I think so. Well, it's just, you're looking... First of all, it's you're in the basement of a taco restaurant. It smells like tacos. All the lights
are
on.
These are good things in my brain right now.
All the lights are fluorescent lights. You're on a mic, you know, just in the corner.
It was the lights problem.
I'm not saying that's my... It's just, this is the environment, you know?
Wasn't conducive to tree doctor jokes.
It's the most awkward situation possible. And I was doing the stupidest thing that made the least sense. And so, like, I'm sure I started talking and everyone was immediately like, what the fuck is this? I'm tuning out. I don't care. You know, because the challenge with an open mic is how do you get the open mic comics to look up from their notebooks and to not be thinking about their sets. That's challenge one, which is what, that's what I love about open. That's what I learned to love about them, was that like you had to know immediately how to get people's attention and how to make them sit up and get your ideas across very clearly, you know,
because until the audience is fellow comedians and they're not going to do you any favors. You have to earn it.
Yeah. It's like training with, you know, heavy weights on your arms or whatever, you know, it's like extra strength, you know, and after a while, like it stops becoming beneficial, you know, but like it was good training eventually to go to an open mic and be like, okay, it's a room full of bored comics. How do I get there? What can I say that will actually interest them in this moment? You know, that will unite the room in paying attention to what I'm saying.
That's how I felt at I didn't know that open mics were a thing. I happened upon an open mic because a friend asked me to see a show, which might be not the best thing to tell your friend to do. But I loved it. It was this very freaky open mic called Surf Reality, which I'm sure.
Oh, I remember that name.
It was fantastic. The thing is, it was so different than anything else that it wasn't just comics. It was musicians. It was all it was all kinds of people. So I thought, oh, I sing. I can go up at this open mic. But how are they going to pay attention? This is such an alty room. I saw so many weird things in that room that how am I going to, if I just come in and sing like Aretha Franklin like I want to, they're going to be like, this is too normal. So I was doing kids' parties.
Oh, it is too normal. Let me give you an example. A woman went on stage and she was going to be a chicken and literally lay an egg, meaning she put an egg in her vagina And it was going to, and you know, it represented something, world peace, the state of the country.
You wouldn't put it up your asshole? No, I guess it would be your vagina.
So, well, you know, she had to practice at home, right? That's what I picture. But anyway, she was at, or maybe she didn't practice because she says, I'm going to lay an egg. It represents blah, blah, blah. You know, she's nude, so I'm not paying attention. And then the egg comes out of her vagina broken.
No.
The yolk is dripping.
No.
The shell is cracked. And she's like, oh, I should have hard boiled it. Comes back the next week, hard boiled, and does it again. Smashing success.
Literally. Yeah. She had to go to the hospital that night, but it was worth it. Oh,
so, of course, Henda knows she can't
like
just.
Shards.
Yeah. She Henda can't just sing a song. She knows she has to up it.
Yeah. So I upped it. I was doing kids' parties at the time. And I borrowed a Pocahontas outfit, which just means like the Pocahontas dress. I came in barefoot. I was doing a lot of Pocahontas for kids' parties. So I knew the song and I knew some of the sign language for that song. So I thought in order for them to pay attention, I teach them a little bit of the sign language like I do to the children.
What's the song? Colors of the Wind?
Yeah, the Colors of the Wind. Taught them how to say wolf, how to do a rainbow. Who knew? And half of them, the whole time I'm thinking, you know, this might not be the right sign language to this. I'm just kind of like doing a kid's party right here. And they were into it. And I started going there every week. It was the most amazing thing because you can do weird things like that. Yeah. You can. Because
they're all on drugs. They're like, oh, I do see the colors of the wind.
But that's nice when an open mic creates a specific culture, you know, that it has around it. It has like its own, you know, that sounds like, like a sort of art open mic where there's like, people come in and do that kind of thing.
Yeah, in fact, it was a converted home. And because on the Lower East Side at the time in New York, people weren't paying attention. It was above a brothel.
Whoa.
When it first opened.
Was it a squat?
Nope. The guy was paying rent, but the Lower East Side used to be a madhouse. It was above a brothel, and there was crack down the block. And we were able to, while we were sitting in the audience, people passed joints. We were smoking in that room. One of the rules was no smoking cigarettes, but you could literally smoke anything else. I know there was somebody.
Can I just tell you, this mic is 100 times more awesome than any open mic I ever did. You're describing an absolute unicorn. This is what a wonderful place. This is like a paradise compared to, again, I was in the basement of a taco restaurant.
I want to be clear that people would bring in food.
That's amazing.
What did you feel afterwards? Were you like, job well done? It's their fault. I'm in a taqueria.
I was just sort of like dull shame, you know what I mean? It was definitely one of those experiences where you've got your plan and it all, when you're doing it, it all goes to shit, you know? Like the words are coming out badly and you're sort of frozen up and you're like, it's going so differently than it went in my head, you know? And then you just sort of like leave in a sort of like state of utter humiliation, you know what I mean?
Did you make any reference to you bombing at the time? Did you do all the jokes that you had lined up or did you abort at some point?
I'm pretty sure I just did exactly everything that I had because that's the classic, you know, like that's the, like, I've prepared, I know what I'm doing, you know what I mean?
Do you remember, your favorite joke that didn't hit?
Oh God, no, I'm sorry that I don't have a recall for exactly what the jokes were. I wish I had a copy of it.
Your brain's doing you a favor.
I know. I mean, you know, after like a couple years after that, I finally got an iPhone. I started recording all my open mic sets. And like, that is the
humbling.
Ultimate. What do I do with this? It's like toxic waste of my own history. You know, I have like hundreds of hours of me doing the worst stand up, you know, saying like horrible, you know, things that I wouldn't want anyone to know I was saying, you know, like, et cetera.
Are you nervous having them because somebody might find them like a diary? I don't know.
A little bit. You know, I had a really early set, the first time I ever taped myself on like, Vimeo a couple years ago. And like, you know, by that point I had made it private, you know, but eventually I was just like, I'm just going to delete this off the server. Cause like, I don't want it to be, you know, I don't want it to be like in the cloud. And you know, who knows, probably might be up there somewhere.
Russians,
you know what I mean?
But, get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was,
hey, if Sony leaks rough. Can happen, this can happen.
And what do you learn from that you do stand up again? That, hey, don't do characters.
Well, yeah, definitely don't do characters.
Be the bush instead of the tree next time.
Is it because, like, do you realize it's ridiculous because we do, in fact, love bushes?
Would it be like going up there and saying,
people don't care that much. You know, people like Bush is fine, right. You know. But I mean, I think what I realized was, you know, that the jokes were like, you know, the jokes were so overwrought. You know, they were like trying to do like, you know, comparisons or fake out or anti-humor jokes or like, you know what I mean? Like, right. Like trying to like adapt a recognizable joke structure to something about Bush's, you know what I right. mean? I think I was probably trying to like parody, you know, other styles of comedy.
So the whole thing ended up being anti-humor.
The whole thing was very anti-humor. Yes.
Did you put
that's on? That's the problem with. And it's a weird thing that young comics do where they say, I'm going to do anti-comedy. Very, very common for comedians, especially male comedians in their early 20s, do anti-comedy because.
What does anti-comedy mean to people? You're not going to laugh? What is this?
Anti-comedy is like doing a parody of comedy. So doing intentionally bad jokes in the hopes of getting laughs. And there are a couple comics who do it very well. I've seen Andy Daly do really great anti-comedy stuff. Etc. You know,
the list goes on.
Kind of thing, you know, Mr. Show would do that. You know, like David Cross, Bob Odenkirk would do it. Right. But the thing is, young comics do it because it's easier for them to make fun of bad comedy than it is to write a good joke. And so they do it because it sort of shows I have taste. I know what bad is. I'm making fun of bad on stage mm-hmm. for you right now. But at the end of the day, nobody cares about making fun of bad comedy. No one's like, you know, who gives a yeah. shit about bad comedy? People want to hear a good joke. And so it's a very immature stage. And it also,
I guess, because people go to church, not anti-God places.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And it also is a, and this is what I was doing with my dumb anti-comedy bit, was it sets up this like protective layer for you where you don't have to be honest. You don't have to like express an actual thought that you have or be true to yourself because you've sort of created this like intellectual edifice that you're, you know, enacting. Right.
And what did your tree voice sound like?
What my tree voice? Yeah, yeah. I think here's the stupid thing. You would think
the whole thing.
You would think that the whole thing was very stupid, but you would think that if I was going to do a bit that elaborate, that I would go and like buy an outfit
no.
that like a tree doctor would wear or like bring a prop or like just to be like, I'm a character. But no, I just went in my bullshit 21-year-old man shit clothes, you know, like my jeans that didn't fit and my like Saucony sneakers and my bad graphic tee and was like, I'm a tree doctor. Here's my jokes on that premise. Like in my normal voice, you
I
know,
really, because I pictured like I'm a tree doctor and I go up to the trees and it's like, oh, thank you, Adam, for being here. And then, but as I pass by the bushes, they're like, oh, not here for me again. Oh, no. And there's like a whole like forest. And then the deer comes up to you and it's like, oh, can you find a doctor for us? We're hurting too. I mean, how did this tree talk to you and I didn't?
See.
Oh, can I get a hug?
You
get
got
it? Tree hug.
Such a better handle on this than I did at the time.
You can use that buddy.
So I think what I learned was.
You
what,
love trees.
What I,
I'm sorry.
Sure,
is
I really
that,
love them.
Is that a saying, a tree hug?
Tree huggers. Hugger. Tree huggers. Okay, okay. Tree huggers. Come on, man. Come
All
on.
Right, sorry.
Dude, we're doing tree jokes here. Come on.
Come on. I think what I learned from that experience is that, like, really quickly, and this is what I love about stand-up, is that you learn that your plans for it are not as important as actually doing it. You know, like you can spend all the time you want in your room in the mirror going like, this is what I'm going to do, and this is why people are going to like it, you know? But once you're out there, you're like really naked, you know, on the stage, and you have to respond in that moment, you know, like right. everything that you thought you knew about stand up is totally jettisoned after you've done it three times.
And that's, you know, why I really think that you should tweet to Adam Conover at Adam Conover and tell him all like the really good tree jokes and the
Please
really
do.
Good Bush jokes. I think that'll help.
That would help me out a lot. That would, because then I could go out. Then I could go and redeem myself.
Now I want an Adam Ruins Everything where it's like, did you know that hippies don't really like trees all that much? Here's Dr. Tree Hugger.
Now that you know where you went wrong,
yeah,
would you revisit it?
That bit?
Yeah.
God, no.
Okay.
I mean, well, let's see. If I were to rewrite a whole thing about like. No, it's not a funny premise. The
hey,
idea
Bush,
that,
leave me alone.
Yeah, the idea that this guy hates Bush. First of all, it doesn't even track. Why would a tree doctor hate Bushes? There's no justification for this. And then secondly, why would he be driven to do stand-up comedy about it? And then three, you have to write jokes that like assume his perspective that the audience doesn't share about why Bushes right. are bad. There's no heart to it. There's no into it.
It's so deep. But now that I'm thinking about it, your mom is a...
My mom's a botanist.
So this... Okay. This clears up a little bit. Did you run it by your mom? And your mom's like, oh my God, it's the best joke ever.
No, she's like, why'd you hate bushes? I don't understand.
Yeah, because just because they're nice.
Yeah.
Trees wouldn't hate bushes, son.
Yeah. Because you love trees doesn't mean you hate bushes. A heart doctor doesn't hate the brain.
Exactly. That's the problem. It would be one thing. It could maybe work if you did a character where it's like, hey guys, I, you know, my day job, I'm a tree doctor, but you know, at night I like to try stand-up comedy, and so here's my jokes from that perspective. That might be a funny character, but there's this other dumbass element that he hates bushes and he's like clowning on bushes that like is out of nowhere and makes no, doesn't add up to anything.
I mean, a rose bush, think of the thorns.
You had to have some thorn stuff there, right?
But you know, it was a good... Yeah, I definitely had some... Oh, you know I went hard on thorns, Keith. You know I went in on thorns.
You know what? And then he has like... He makes a whole production of it. He brings like a little thing to connect to the board. And it's like, okay, on my mark, when I say, and I hate bushes, doesn't everybody hate bushes? Every rose has its thorn.
Oh, if you knew to add production. Oh, my goodness. What year was this? Do you remember?
This would have been Tuesday. Like 2006. Yeah, something like that. 2005, 2000. I moved to New York in 2005. I'm going to guess it was 2006.
All right. Mm. Well, the show is called Adam Ruins Everything. Back in 2006, he tried to ruin stand up.
I did a really good job. I mean, thank God that I love stand up because you really just learn it by doing it, you know? And right. So like now, like that's when people say, what, you know, oh, I want to get a stand up. What do I do? It's like, just go get on stage, write two jokes, you know, and then just go up there and just experience what it's like to hold the microphone, you know, because right. that's, you learn all of it by doing it.
Do you have like words of wisdom before your first thing? Like, yeah, write a couple jokes, learn what it is to hold a mic. But one thing,
you know, the best advice I got from, I got it from this book that this guy Franklin Ajayi wrote. He's like an, you know, old, like hired older generation of comic. He wrote this book called Comic Insights that was like interviews with a bunch of comics. And at the end, he had a little slim section. Here's my tips for starting stand up. And the one that really helped was he said, don't, when you go up, and by the way, I read this after my bullshit. I was like, that went bad. I got to learn what I'm doing. So I ordered a book, you know, like, so I learned this later. But he said, don't get up trying to, when you get up there, don't make it your goal to try to get laughs because you're not going to. It's your first time. You are not going to get laughs. That's not the point. Try to focus on, find something else that you want to work on, you know, that, you know, obviously you're going to write jokes that you think are funny, right? But especially your first couple dozen times, you know, think, this time my goal is to get on stage and take the microphone out of the stand cleanly and with confidence or something like that. Or my goal is to not say all the time like I did last time. Or my goal is to try to have fun. Right. Like that's like a really important thing with stand up. It's just like like you have to communicate that you're having fun, whether or not the audience is having fun.
Because they can feel your nervousness.
As soon as you seem upset to be up there, they're like clenching up because they feel bad for you, you know. So you need to be relaxed and feel like you're having a good time. And you have to like learn how to do that artificially and like just be like, hey, whatever, man. You know, it took me years to learn how to do that. But that if you go up there thinking that's my intention and then you can judge yourself based on that rather than based on the audience response. Because the thing that you don't know when you start stand up is that honestly, a good like 60% of how good the show is based on who's in the crowd, the shape of the room, what the lighting is like. You know what I mean?
If the tacos are good.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they use cilantro on everything or do they consider something?
So you know,
did it come with a lime wedge?
Adam has to look at the menu before he accepts the gig. But it is funny how stand-up is one of the, if not the only, one of the few jobs where you have to learn by doing it. Picture yes. being a tree doctor and you just go out there on your first day taking a stethoscope to a redwood. You'd be an idiot. But, you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, it's like get out there and do it. And the best thing, here's my favorite thing about stand-up is that All you got to do to be a stand-up comic is you just got to do it a bunch of nights a week. You got to do it, what, 3 to 5 times a week? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can be the worst comic in the world, but you're still a comic. You know, you're, maybe you're an open mic comic, but you're a comic, right? So to do it is to do it, you know? And that's like the first step, is just to become a comic by doing it all
but
the time.
But it doesn't hurt to buy that book he mentioned. You know?
Yeah, and buy the book and learn and record yourself and listen to yourself and set goals and like get better and improve and like, you know, like be an interesting person and do interesting things in your life that you could take on the
stage.
You're
listing a lot now. No.
That's a lot. But, you know, the first thing to do is to do it, which that's what I love about it, you know. Yeah.
And how beautiful that as soon as you do it, you are a comic. You know, there's not many jobs like that. Maybe porn star. You're a star immediately. But other than that, there's not too many.
Yeah. And also, again, if you just took his advice and you do want to start stand-up comedy and you did go, okay, all I have to do is do it, tag him in your opening line. Hashtag my opening line, and he'll critique it.
That would be great.
And he promises to put you on stage. Adam Conover. This was a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This is a blast.
Take a listen and look around adamconover.net. See what's doing. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you and Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you fuck.